Hey everyone, it's the Lookout Landing Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Weber, and today we've got a great guest, Aaron Goldsmith, radio play-by-play announcer for the Seattle Mariners. He's joining us today. We're just gonna talk about what it's been like in his first year on the job, and for me, one of my favorite podcasts that we've ever done. Great guest. Can't thank him enough for coming on and doing this and giving us the time of day. So sit back and enjoy, hopefully. And thanks for listening. All right. We've got joining us here this time on the podcast. It's Aaron Goldsmith, Mariners radio broadcaster. How are you, Aaron? Thanks for doing this.
Doing very well, Scott. Thank you so much for thinking of me.
So you're out there in Baltimore. How's the road trip going besides the horrible crushing losses that the Mariners have had?
Oh, yeah. You take that out of the equation. It's been fantastic. two good cities in Boston and Baltimore and some nice restaurants nearby, some nice locations. So you take away what has happened thus far between the lines. It's been pretty good, but there's no doubt that it's been a rough road trip for the Mariners, and hopefully they can turn things around here pretty quickly.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, it's kind of back home for you, right? Because you were broadcasting out in Pawtucket before you came to the Mariners, so I'm assuming you got some friends and some family in the area.
Yeah, it's been nice. I think there's a little bit of a misconception with some folks. A lot of people think I'm from the East Coast. I'm from St. Louis. I lived in Missouri my whole life. But I did spend a couple of seasons working in the Red Sox system in 09 with their AA club, and then last year with their AAA club in Pawtucket, Rhode Island. So it's always nice for me to come back to the Boston area. My wife, her family is from a Boston suburb, and there's a number of guys on the Red Sox side of things that I know from past season. So it is nice, but it's not fun to face them. They're a hot ball club this year.
Yeah, they're just ridiculous. That lineup is absolutely incredible, brutal to go through. So how's it been kind of settling into Seattle and into the area, you know, like things like that? Have you kind of found, I mean, hopefully you found a good area that you like to hang out in, good area to live in and all that stuff?
Yeah, mostly it's been Safeco Field, but past that, in all seriousness, I absolutely love Seattle. We're so grateful because when you're in this line of work, you can't really be picky as to where you broadcast. And if you're fortunate enough to get a major league job, you just kind of cross your fingers that it's in a town, a city, a state, a region that you like. And neither one of us had ever been out to Seattle before, but I fell in love with it instantly. Gosh, especially during the summer. So we're loving it. We spent the whole All-Star break in Seattle just kind of exploring around, seeing what's out there. We kind of played tourist, nice, which was fun and nerdy at the same time. So we absolutely love the Pacific Northwest and Seattle, and we both hope that we're here for a long, long time.
All right, good. Any highlights here in the area that you picked up during your touristy stuff? You go down to Pike Place and do all that kind of stuff?
You know, we hit Pike Place on our first off day of the season, so that was way back in April. But I'm a big seafood lover, even though I'm from the Midwest. Yes. And so I'm absolutely loving all the different fresh seafood you can get, whether it's at a local fishmonger or at restaurants. We're trying to plow through the Tom Douglas restaurants. I think we've got like six down by now, five or six. And okay, so that's a fun challenge to try to knock all those off the list. But what a great food city. I mean, seriously, there's terrific restaurant after outstanding restaurant. So we're loving getting to know the area through our stomachs.
Yeah, I mean, my wife and I, we're pretty big foodies ourselves, and the scene is just incredible. I mean, seafood, yeah. If there's some amazing stuff, definitely Walrus and the Carpenter is a great place to go out in Ballard too. I don't know, are you in North Seattle, or are you an East Sider, or where's kind of your realm where you're around?
We're over in Kirkland right now. We knew that, you know, when we came out for Fan Fest, we had 7 days to find a place to live.
Oh, wow.
In an area of the country that we had never been to before. So we looked all over the place, and it was a fun challenge because there were so many attractive places to call home. But we knew we wanted to rent for a year and change till we kind of knew the area better. Right. And so we found a nice place in Kirkland, pretty close to the water, which we both enjoyed. And the Walrus and the Carpenter, I got to tell you, we went there, I guess that was end of April or early May.
Nice.
And yeah, we we plowed through some oysters there. That was a good spot to go.
Yeah, that one's great. There's so many. If you ever want food recommendations, you can just come to me because I've got.
You're the guy.
I've plowed through many in the area. No question. Yeah, I'm actually out in Bothell myself, so I'm east sider, north sider as well.
Gotcha.
So yeah, Volterra there in Kirkland. That's a pretty good spot too for food.
Good to know.
Yeah, that's down there. So I'm, I talked to Brandon Bantz after he came up just for those few games. And the one thing that I'm just like eternally fascinated with is this moment for major league ball players when they, when they get the call from the minor leagues and it's the dream come true and it's everything they've been working for. But certainly you had that moment too. And I mean, you go through a long list of applicants that tried out for this job. And I'm kind of interested in hearing about what that moment was for you when you got the call, when you're like, I'm going to be a major league broadcaster. Who were you with and how did you celebrate?
Well, first of all, Scott, let me say that I'm shocked and also somewhat thrilled that the first name that you bring up in this interview is Brandon Bantz. That's fantastic. that is the last, maybe Umberto Quintero and Brandon Bantz. Those might be the last two guys I thought we'd cover today.
But what about Cameron Lowe?
That's right. The sinker baller, Cameron Lowe. It's obviously a dream come true for me. I was at McCoy Stadium in Pawtucket, Rhode Island, which is a 71-year-old ballpark where the Paw Sox play, and it was kind of a cold winter night, and we were about ready to pack up and go home for the evening, and I got the call and just dropped down to the ground immediately and just couldn't believe it, and was so thrilled that my goodness, they wanted to hire me, because hey, we all know there's a lot of guys who do this for a living, whether it's in the minors or the majors, and a lot of guys who would like to come out to Seattle and work at such a beautiful ballpark and such a great city. So for them to want to bring me on board, I'll always be indebted to the folks with the Mariners who made that decision, because hey, let's be honest, you could probably list easily a dozen guys who could do this job as well as I do, if not better, depending on your tastes. And there's hundreds of guys who just want to do it flat out. So, it means a lot to me that the Mariners wanted to bring me on. It comes down, like I tell people who want to get in this business or any other competitive field, it's like a relationship. It's like when you're dating a girl or you want to get married to a girl, it's all about the right fit. I mean, we've all hung out with girls and thought, man, she would be great to date, or she'd be make a great wife, but you know what? She's just not the right fit for me. Mm-hmm. And so I think when it comes down to applying for a play-by-play job, and the Mariners are my sixth team in 7 years.
Wow.
So I've moved around a lot. I've never been fired. Let's get that out there. So it's not that I'm losing my job. But the bottom line is it's about the right fit, right? It's about the right fit for you and for the employer, in this case, the Mariners. And so fortunately, they thought that I was the right fit for Rick, for the broadcast, for Kevin as well, who's such a big part of things, our producer and engineer. So gosh, it's just, there's still so many kind of like pinch me, surreal, this is actually happening moments. And I'm sure it's going to be like that for all of this year and even probably some going forward.
I think, yeah, it's just, it's so cool. And I think you've done a fantastic job, by the way. I get that out there. But the coolest thing for me personally is when I saw your hire, we're the same age. I'm 29 going on 30. I got about 3 weeks left until I'm 30. And it was my dream to be a baseball broadcaster when I was in junior high and in high school and then a little bit through college. And, things happened in college and the major changed and things like that. But to see someone that's right at my age kind of fulfill that that long dream of having that, I just think it's so cool, man. So we're super glad to have you here, and it's awesome, man. I can't believe it. Someone my age on the airwaves. It's pretty awesome.
Well, that's very kind of you. I appreciate that. It's one of those situations where the sooner you realize that you cannot do this alone, the better off you're going to be. Mm-hmm. Because you just, when you start off in a business like baseball play-by-play on the radio, and the only way to get better is to actually do it and to get feedback from people. The sooner that you embrace the constructive criticism, the help, and the guidance from people who have been there and done that and are better than you, the better off you'll be. And I could spend an hour easily talking about all the different people over the years in the minors coming up to this point and who still are a big influence and a big help to me and have been willing to give me their time to let me know how I can get better. And I'm sure that's never going to end because, hey, we can always get better. That's for sure.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. As kind of in your role, though, this really interests me a lot, and I wanted to get your take. There's been a lot in broadcasting right now, especially lately, that's kind of talked about, you know, this war on advanced stats. And I don't know if you've seen kind of a Hawk Harrelson has kind of been going at it with Brian Kenny a little bit on MLB yeah. Now. And, you know, he goes out of his way to kind of disparage the new stats. And he was, you know, talking last week about stats don't measure how, you know, a guy stands in at double plays and at second base and he takes the hit and things like that. What is kind of like your take on the future of broadcasting? Because historically, numbers like that have really not been mentioned on the air. And now we're starting to see them in broadcasts, where we'll start to see, you know, watch a game on ESPN. And, you know, a while ago they added OPS, and now, you know, they'll do little in-game graphics. It'll say, hey, here's wins above replacement. They'll talk about their UZR, things like that. For you, when you're on the air, how much do you try to give credence to that? And when do you feel it's appropriate? And do you think it's ever going to change to the point where so many people will understand what it is that you can kind of bring it up and it's not a big deal?
I think it's definitely, as we all know, it's certainly evolving to becoming more popular as the fan base gets younger and those who kind of grew up with it, so to speak, start to become the major listeners or viewers, whether it's radio or TV. I think for me, the two things that stand out the most is, and believe me, when all of us broadcasters eat dinner together in the press room, Rick and Blo and Dave Sims and Kevin and me and some of the producers on TV, a lot of times we always kind of break for dinner at the same time before we go on air. Mm-hmm. And there's been plenty of times at Fenway Park, we had a pretty spirited debate about a group of four or five or six of us about some of the more sabermetric-y stats. And I think the bottom line is the sooner we can all realize that both have advantages and both have kind of holes in their swing, so to speak, mm-hmm. the better off we'll be. I mean, I think any Mariners fan knows perfectly well by now that wins for a pitcher almost means nothing.
Thank you. Yes.
I mean, seriously, I mean, you look at Felix and what he's done. I mean, look at the Twins game from a couple of weeks ago, by the time, depending on when people are listening to this. I mean, Felix goes 9 innings. You know, he gives up one run. It comes with one out of the 9th inning. Game goes to extras, and it's a loss. Or,
yep.
Pardon me, no decision for
no
Felix.
Decision. Yep.
And it's like, just look at what happened in Boston the other night. So imagine how many wins Felix would have if he was with a better offense or for a different team or just didn't have some poor breaks. Because let's face it, the Mariners' offense at times, especially since the break, a little bit before the break, has been fantastic. Mm-hmm. But it's all about the timing, right? It's all about when that offense comes up with hits and when it doesn't. So not to throw the Mariners' bats under the bus because they've really been very good lately. But the bottom line is when you get back to some of these a little more adopted stats now, like certainly on-base percentage, slugging percentage, OPS, I do kind of feel like in terms of integrating it into a radio broadcast, I do kind of feel like anytime I reference them, which I'll be honest isn't a ton, mm-hmm. but when I do, I kind of feel like I have to either preface it somehow with an explanation or backfill with an explanation of what slugging percentage is or what OPS is. I feel like on-base percentage is kind of self-explanatory because not everybody who is listening to the broadcast is a reader of Lookout Landing and knows all about these things. And
right,
so the last thing I want is a husband and a wife who are moderate Mariners fans who are trying to get on board, driving home from dinner, and they hear me talking about Nick Franklin's OPS, and I'm throwing numbers out there to him, and they're going, well, I can't listen to this because I don't know what he's talking about. And now I've kind of lost a listener. So there is, for me at least, this feeling of I really need to kind of explain it in as subtle as a way possible so the listeners who don't know aren't in the dark.
Sure. And I'm sure that's especially true for a radio demographic too, because it's one thing where you can describe it with a graphic on TV and you can kind of have a little subheader that says, here's what the stat is. And then it puts it in company. I mean, if you list leaders by OPS, you can say, oh, look, Kyle Seager's right up here, and here's where David Ortiz is, and here's where Miguel Cabrera is. You know, there's kind of like a barometer for what's good and what's not. And, you know, a radio demographic, I'm sure, skews a little bit older, too, I would assume. So, yeah, that's interesting. I'm fascinated to see how that's going to change over the years, because, like you said, people that grow up with the statistic are more familiar with it. And, you know, we'll see if it gets to the place where some of these are commonplace, but at the same time, sabermetric stats continue to grow, and they continue to morph and change. You know, 6 years ago we were using VORP, and now we're using wins above replacement. You know, they fade and they go. So that's interesting. That's a really interesting perspective.
No, and I think to your point, it's a good one, and it's something that I really should do more often. And this is something that like Al Michaels does on the NBC Sunday Night Football telecast. He does such a good job of giving you a stat of some kind, but then giving you a reference point. I mean, if you say that so-and-so has whatever, 457 on base percentage, well, for somebody, that means absolutely nothing. I mean, literally, you're speaking a language to them that they have no idea what it is. So if you can then put that in context with some other great player in the game who has a similar on base percentage or slugging or whatever it might be, I mean, to me, I think that's really the key. And if you want to talk about nuts and bolts of broadcasting, on the radio especially, that context is what's so important, because that's an instant. You know, you compare somebody to the slugging percentage of Miguel Cabrera, and even a relatively novice baseball fan goes, oh, well, he's pretty good.
Right.
So if this guy is somewhere in his category, then he's pretty good. So, and I think that's, for almost any stat, besides the very basic one, some kind of context is always a nice thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you're ever going to talk about like something like wins above replacement, you can kind of break it down too and say, look, Kyle Seager, he's top 20 in this stat because he's a great hitter. He's a good fielder. He's a good base runner. He does everything well. But I think especially on radio, if you're going to tell someone that, you know, Raul Ibanez has the same, you know, wins above replacement as, you know, someone that's not very impressive, they're going to have a hard time understanding, especially when you can't really convey why that's the case, positional scarcity and all that stuff.
Right. You know, it's funny when we were doing a radio broadcast, I think Rick either had the game off or he was filling in for Sims on TV. But I was with Dave Valley, and, you know, Val is over at MLB Network with Brian Kenny, yep, for a few days each month. And so Val is really pretty hip to all this stuff. And it was so funny because he and I started talking about wins above replacement, which is not a typical conversation on our broadcast. And it was great getting Val's perspective because he's kind of in that mold of an old school guy. But he hangs around with Brian Kenny so much that just through osmosis, he's picked up some of these things and has his own opinion on it. And I'll tell you what, it was great. We started talking about war and the tweets as we're doing the broadcast start pouring in. I mean, we must have gotten 7 tweets in a span of 5 minutes and it was all the Lookout Landing demographic people saying, more war talk, please. I love the war. And what I would have loved to know is how many people were on the exact opposite end of that spectrum, right, point. What? Who's going to war? Somebody fighting? I don't, what's happening?
Those are the ones without Twitter.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it's funny because, you know, it's you want to make as many people happy as possible. You're trying to appeal to the broadest range. So I was happy that for those war students out there, we were able to give you at least 5 minutes of wins above replacement talk.
that's very good. Yeah. It's a fascinating topic. I appreciate you touching on it a little bit. I want to kind of change gears a little bit because this is another thing that's kind of interesting to me in your situation. So from St. Louis Cardinals fan growing up?
That's right.
Okay. So, you come to Seattle and, like you said, you've bounced around all these different teams. And I guess it's a little different when it's minor league teams. But all of a sudden, you're kind of like an adopted fan, right? And that's how it's, that's how it's always been for Mariner broadcasters outside of, Blowers and Valley, the guy, and, Dan and Jay and all the guys that have played for the team. When the Mariners were in their inception, they were brand new. So they were pulling broadcasters from all over the place. So what is it like to kind of balance being a broadcaster and being a fan? Are you instantly kind of an adopted fan of the Mariners, where you find yourself pulling for the team regardless? I mean, I assume that it makes your job more fun when the Mariners are winning, but do you still kind of keep an eye too on the Cardinals? And different league, so I think it's acceptable to have kind of dual fandomship there, right?
I hope so. I hope that's acceptable. It's funny. I've worked in the Red Sox system for 2 separate years. I've worked in the Rangers system for 2 years. I worked in Indy Ball. I worked in the Cape League, which is a kind of collegiate wood bat league in mm-hmm. Cape Cod. And then now here in Seattle. So it's funny, like to me, as a broadcaster, your fandomship or fandom of your own team kind of revolves around, at least for me, I can only speak for my own opinion or my own experience, kind of revolves around the relationships that you make with some of the guys. And there's no doubt that each year is kind of different, especially in the minors, because there's so much movement of guys coming up and guys leaving and signing with other teams. And so in the minor leagues, it's like you start a new year with the same team and you could have 3/4 new players. But this clubhouse for the Mariners, and I'll preface this by saying, I really don't like the question when people say or ask, man, what's the clubhouse like?
Right.
Tell us, how do you feel in the club? Well, I don't know. I mean, I'm in there for, I'm in there when everybody's genuinely pretty happy. It's hours before first pitch. The guys are in a good mood. They haven't even taken BP yet. So it's kind of tough, I think, if you really want to be honest about it, to gauge a clubhouse, unless it's just awful.
Mm-hmm.
But I love this clubhouse. I think the guys, by and large, are outstanding. They're so laid back. A lot of them are really young, and they're thrilled to be in the major leagues. And they're just like me. They're soaking up every second of it. And so I've formed some working relationships with guys on the team that I just genuinely love showing up at the ballpark and running into somebody, one of these guys at their locker, and just talking about last night and tonight. And hey, tell me about this play and that type of play. And so from that side of things, I have found myself rooting for the 2013 Mariners more than any other team that I've ever covered, which is really exciting to be able to say that. I mean, I genuinely mean that. Mm-hmm. Now, that being said, you know, as a broadcaster, you root for these guys, but obviously you have to watch how that comes across on air.
Right.
I'm not a wee guy. Neither is Rick, which I think is a good thing. I want fans to know that I'm rooting for these guys, and I want them to do well, because the fans are doing the same thing. But
you don't want to be Hawk.
As an example, I mean, I, like everyone else, I think in Seattle and in that clubhouse, I love Brad Miller. Right. I mean, Brad is one of the best guys I've ever met in baseball. And Nick Franklin's another example. Mike Zunino, Kyle Seager. I mean, you could go on and on and on. Charlie Furbush is outstanding.
Mm-hmm.
But, when Brad has his, unfortunately, another bobble on an exchange at shortstop, something we haven't seen really since he's been called up, and then all of a sudden lately it seems like the defensive blunders for Brad have started to pile up a little bit. That pains me. It really does. But on air, I have to say, hey, Brad didn't make that play. But I can backfill that and say, this is not the Brad Miller that we've seen for the last month. This is happening lately. We know that he's got a good arm. We know that he can field his position well. He's gotten to balls in the past that we never thought he'd be able to get to. And so he just needs to get back to the guy that he was. I mean, I think the point on air is you never want to really truck a guy.
Right.
And you want to me, it's like if you're going to say something negative, you can always fill that in at the end with something positive, because – really almost every time there's something good. I mean, there's something good about every player. Some listeners might disagree, but you can, no matter how deep you have to go, there's something there. And I think it's our responsibility to not have a Debbie Downer broadcast.
Right. Well, you also have never had to broadcast Unieski Betancourt. So I think that you had it pretty easy.
I understand.
If you were broadcasting this team 5-6 years ago, I think that might have been a more difficult statement to make, I'm going to assume.
That might be a fair point.
You're on the upswing, so it's good, right?
That's right. That's absolutely true.
Oh, man. So growing up, St. Louis, card collector growing up?
You know, I really was. I was a card collector and an autograph, big-time autograph collector as well. Until, like, I was actually talking with somebody about this the other day. Until maybe, like, my sophomore year in high school. And then all of a sudden, I was just like, nope, I'm done.
Yeah.
It was just, I hit the wall. And I think, and I'm glad I hit it then and not, like, you know, when I was 27 or 47.
Cards are expensive now.
They're insane, aren't they?
They're incredible. I can't believe it.
And I just remember, like, once it goes from, as a card collector, once it goes from strictly, I just love all these cards and it's just so fun to collect them because I'm a kid and I don't have any personal belongings really of my own. Right. So, you know, having a million baseball cards makes me feel special. When it goes from that to, oh, I really like these players, but also I really like it because the value of these cards and how much they're worth. And then all of a sudden that whatever card with the piece of the jersey or a piece of the batting glove, one, you know, this month is worth $100 and next month it's worth 15.
Yeah.
I mean, and you're just constantly flipping through every page in Beckett. I mean, it's just like, I mean, how depressing is that? I mean,
I know. You know, I think actually that's interesting because I think where for me, it kind of lost some of its luster was when money actually became to mean something. Because when you're a kid, yes, you're like, oh my gosh, I've got this Desi Relaford card, and it's like, it's a common, but who cares? It's, oh, Tough Stuff says it's listed at 8 cents, and Beckett says it's at 5. And that means something to you. You're like, I can go down the street, and these kids down the street have a lemonade stand. I could sell this, and right now, and I could get 5 cents and get a glass of lemonade. That means something. But then, you know, 16, you get your first job. Okay, I made minimum wage in my first job working at Office Max, but all of a sudden, it means something, you know? And you look at these cards and all these commons and you say, I would have to sell 300 of these commons.
That's right.
To make what I made in 45 minutes, hawking Hewlett-Packard printers.
Well, you know, there was this great moment when I was a kid. I collected baseball, basketball, hockey, and football cards.
Yep.
I ran the whole gamut. And there was this great moment. One of my great buddies was a massive basketball card collector. And so we had a sleepover one night. You know, we're like in fourth grade or whatever. And we're on my bedroom floor. We have all of our cards laid out, right? Like they're all just like corner to corner, edge to edge, all of my cards laid out, all of his cards laid out. And it's all basketball cards. You know, we got like Grant Hill rookie cards. You know, we've got like Jerry Stackhouse rookie cards.
Sure.
And the door of my bedroom comes swinging open. And my dog comes barreling in and just stomps over all of these cards.
No.
And I would pay good money to have like a security surveillance film, which doesn't exist, of that moment of Carrie Ball and me, my good friend, just losing our fourth grade minds on my dog. What are you doing? Get out of our bedroom. What is it? I mean, and we just saw the value of all of our life savings just quickly.
Right.
Just like the stock market crashing.
Right.
Just going down the drain.
Oh, my gosh.
And so that's a good reality check for all of us every once in a while.
And how funny is that? I mean, now Jerry Stackhouse, middling, you know, mid-level exception, like, you know, player.
Exactly.
It's like, what, his rookie card is worth like $3 now.
Yeah.
But it's like, I mean, I had like maybe a 1998 Upper Deck Collector's Choice Kerry Kittles card, and it was numbered out of 100. And I'm thinking, oh my gosh, this is a serial number card. It's so amazing. I lost it. I remember I just lost my mind. Where did this card go? And now here I am, you know, 14, 15 years later going, yeah, that was a Kerry Kittles card. Where is Kerry Kittles? I don't know where Kerry Kittles is.
He would probably like that card. He'd trade you for it.
He probably would. You know, what I did about a year or two ago, and actually there is a card store in Kirkland. It's in Totem Lake on 124th, kind of as you go down towards Willows Road and Redmond there, is I walked in, and I did this in one in North Seattle on Aurora, and I just said, I want to buy some baseball cards. And you can go in and you can buy a box of cards from the early 90s, late 80s for $10 sealed.
Wow. Wow.
You can.
How about that?
I mean, I went in there and I bought a box of 91 Leaf and it was $10. And then I bought a box of 92 Top Stadium Club and it was $10. But it wasn't the good Stadium Club. It was like, you know how they used to do Series 1, Series 2, Series 3?
Right.
And like most of the good players were in Series 1. And then some of the good players were in Series 2. And then by Series 3, it was like, okay, we're like really getting bottom of the barrel here. You know, we're getting
That's
like,
what it was?
I got Series 3. So not so good cards in there.
But there's nothing like opening up a pack of baseball cards.
The smell is just
terrific.
Like, it's terrific.
It is lottery for children. It's really what it is. It is Powerball for 5-year-olds. It's fantastic.
Yeah, and that whole life savings thing didn't really work out. If only those stupid yellow 91 Fleer cars were worth something, because I think I've got about 10,000 of them sitting in my garage.
Oh, we talked about this on the air actually, well over a month ago at this point. But I remember being a little kid, and there was a somebody actually was kind enough to tweet me a photo of one of these cards. I think it was Donruss. It had a red border.
90.
And was that what it was?
1990. Yeah.
And all the players' names were in cursive.
Yep.
And I remember I couldn't. This either goes to tell you either how young I was or just how unadvanced my school system was. I couldn't read cursive. And so every card, I was always having to like flip it over on the back, because I think on the back it had just the regular block print of the guy's name. But if I didn't recognize the player's face, it was so frustrating, because it made me not want to buy those cards anymore, because I'm like, I don't easily know who these players are. So talk about like, you know, 5-year-old problems or how
right.
old I was, you know, like that's 7-year-old problems. That is it. That was the biggest problem in my life at that period of
right.
time. I couldn't read the front of the baseball cards that I just used my weekly allowance to buy. I mean, that's those are the really good days, wasn't it? I mean, that's,
oh yeah,
can't beat that.
Yeah, you're like, I think this is Ben McDonald, but
exactly.
I'm not exactly sure. Oh gosh, and then I remember every time I'd come across 89 Bowman. That was the card that was too big for the regular case. They were tall cards.
Oh, yeah.
And so they wouldn't fit in the sheets. And that was just a source of frustration, too.
It ruins everything.
It did ruin everything. Man, I love baseball cards. I stopped probably about the same time you did, although I kind of made the shift in about 19. I think I probably stopped about 94. Fleer Flair in 94 with the real thick, glossy cards.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, that was probably the last sort of baseball then. And then I kind of moved to basketball for a little bit. And then, yeah, probably about 1999, it was over. Too bad.
It happens to all of us. We all hit the wall at some point. Well, most of us, I should say.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. Okay, let's get back a little bit to...
Brandon Vance.
Yes, sure. Let's talk about that. How unreal was that, by the way? I mean, I talked to him. I had him on the podcast, maybe 6 weeks ago or something. And it was just kind of surreal talking to him, you know, cause, and he knew too, you know, he's talking about it and he says, hey, if I never make it back, you know, I'm blessed to have made it. And it's just like, that's incredible. How many things had to break the right way for that guy to get the call up? It's amazing.
It is. And not to dwell on Vance too much, but in 2008, when I was broadcasting games for the Bourne Braves in the Cape League, Brandon was our catcher. And I told him this story, and I hadn't seen him since that season. And he was this kind of, I guess you could say up-and-coming catcher from Dallas Baptist, had a pretty good college career. And we were doing a road game, and I was that season was awful for me as far as broadcasting conditions. This game we played in Yarmouth, Dennis. I bought a folding card table from Kmart, like the only Kmart left in America. And I set up this folding card table on the far side of the first base dugout where my team was, And right to my, so to my left was a dugout. To my right were a, was a bleacher of fans for the other team. And I had about 200 feet of orange extension cord that I bought at Home Depot running from the concession stand. I plugged it in right above the popcorn machine. And I ran it all the way along the backstop behind the dugout to my little folding table with a metal card chair, you know, folding chair as well. And that's where I called the whole game from. It was awful. I had no perspective on fly balls. Plus, I sounded terrible. So it was just a horrific game to call. But I was so close to the dugout, I could see in the dugout all the time. And Brandon was our catcher that day and for the whole season. And he came running off the field in between innings. And he had to quickly put on his catcher's gear. He must have been like first or second base running. And he reaches over in this dirty, grubby, you know, equipment bag where all of his catching gear he transported to the field, and he pulls out of this bag this peanut butter and jelly sandwich in a Ziploc bag, and I'm telling you, like a tree chipper, this guy shovels this peanut butter and jelly sandwich. He carbs up in between innings, throws on his shin guards, throws on his chest protector, gets his mask, and he runs out there. And I remember this, it was like this frozen moment in time, and I watched the whole thing, like a creeper, just watching this guy eat his PB&J. And I remember thinking to myself, one day, Brandon Vance is going to be a major league catcher for a day. And I'm going to remember the time when, in between innings, he wolfed down this PB&J in a matter of like 5.6 seconds. And so sure enough, he is a major league catcher, even for only nine innings. Mm-hmm. And it gave me such joy to be able to tell him that story once I saw him in the Mariners clubhouse when he got called up. So tip of the cap to Brandon Vance. He tipped his cap to everybody, which was a great moment. Laz Diaz, the home plate umpire, said, if you don't tip your cap before he made his first major league plate appearance, if you don't stand out and tip your cap, you're not going to step inside this batter's box. So That's why, because he practically got a standing ovation from the Safeco Field crowd. Yeah, they put his headshot up on the video board and said, first major league at bat. And so Brandon was walking into the batter's box. He put on the brakes, stepped out, tipped his cap. And I mean, those are the stories that 30 years from now you remember and you're going, it's a very special moment. For the fans, Brandon Vance might come and go. But for Brandon Vance, that's a story that he'll tell his grandkids and a lot of other people for the rest of his life. So pretty special stuff.
Oh, I love that. I love that. And I love the ump told him. Was that,
isn't that great?
That was Laz Diaz?
Yeah, Laz Diaz.
Oh, man. That's good. Yeah. See, I love hearing stuff like that because, I mean, especially, you know, in the world of blogging and writing and stuff like that, you just look at all the numbers and you can really have a tendency to dehumanize the game a little bit when you just get like that. And that's just great to hear because now I won't ever forget that about Diaz.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's one of the pure joys of our job. It takes time to talk to these guys, and some guys like talking more than other guys, and some guys, it just isn't a good day to talk to them. But once you kind of learn the dance a little bit, and you're willing to kind of hang out in the clubhouse, holding up a wall for 15, 20, 30 minutes, waiting for a guy, even if you spend an hour waiting to talk to a guy, if you get one little, as we call it, nugget like that, those are things you don't forget, and those are things that really they make a broadcast better, and they give you more appreciation for a guy's background, a guy's history, these stories, even if they're very brief. It's really, those are the fun times when you stop and you think, well, this guy might be a major league catcher or whatever it might be, but at the end of the day, he's pretty much just like us. He just has a little better hand-eye coordination.
Right. Oh my gosh. I mean, so you're going across all these different stadiums and you're in the locker room a little bit. Have you seen anything this year that is just a remarkable story that you are dying to tell, haven't been able to tell? Any good like pranks or anything you've seen kind of in the clubhouse or on the plane or anything like that?
I haven't seen too many pranks. That's not to say they haven't happened.
Right.
I will say this is a pretty lighthearted Mariners group. Which is great. They're not too lighthearted. They're not, you know, we can make such a big deal out of this stuff. It's like, well, if they're too lighthearted, they're not taking it seriously.
Come on.
And if they're not lighthearted enough, then they're tight. You know, I would say if you don't overanalyze it, I would say that they're at the perfect level. Anytime you got Brendan Ryan in the clubhouse, things aren't going to be too serious. But the guys do a pretty good job overall of razzing each other, and yet respecting each other. Mm-hmm. And it's fun to kind of be a fly on the wall at times when that happens. And for me, one of the real funny things that's happened this year, and I've had fun talking with Nick and Brad about this, Nick Franklin and Brad Miller, is, you know, Nick comes up and, you know, he sets the world on fire. He's, you know, got a great start to his big league career. And then Brad and all the reporters are around Nick Franklin's locker every day, you know, and then Brad Miller comes up and Brad does the same thing. And these two guys are right next to each other in the clubhouse at home. Mm-hmm. And so all of a sudden now all the reporters are going to Brad and it's like, oh, hey, Nick. And all the cameras are by Brad Miller. And so, unfortunately, Nick and Brad, you know, they played against each other in high school. They're really good friends on the field and off the field, which for me, knowing both those guys pretty well at this point, I love seeing that relationship. It's so much fun. You know, they play right next to each other on the field. Their lockers are next to each other in the clubhouse. They get along so well off the field as well. I love the dynamic there. I hope, as I'm getting off topic, that that's a relationship that Mariners fans get to see for many, many, many years from now. But I remember giving Nick a hard time, and Nick gives me a hard time all the time, so it cuts both ways. In fact, I took a picture of when Brad Miller won his American League Rookie of the Week after that series in Houston. They had like an exclusive little media session in the dugout for Brad, because all the reporters, all the cameras wanted to see Brad. And so I took a picture of this, you know, throng of media, and then went back in the clubhouse and showed Frank, and I said, "Hey, bud, I guess they moved on." And that's, you know, that's one of the great things about Nick that I love so much as a person and as a player, is he's so confident that even when he struggles, and he's had some struggles lately, mm-hmm. he doesn't doubt himself, and he's the same guy the next day, even if he does what he did in Fenway Park, which is go 0-for-7 with 4 punchouts. He's not one of these guys that is going to give you the cold shoulder the next day. I mean, I think that's really saying something. And Brad said the same thing too about Nick, that, you know, he's confident and he doesn't doubt his abilities. And I think that's, boy, you know, every rookie is going to have his struggles at some point, but if you don't doubt yourself, but you know that, hey, there's an adjustment here or there, I need a bank, but the bottom line is you don't doubt your abilities. I mean, I think that's one of those intangibles, you know, as we go back to our sabermetrics talk, you know, that's one of those intangibles you can't see on paper. And I think Nick's got that.
Yeah. Well, does Nick know about the Edmundo thing, or do you know about the Edmundo thing?
I don't know about the Edmundo thing.
So when he first came up, his Yahoo player page,
yeah,
listed him as Edmundo Franklin. So anybody that had him in fantasy baseball or would search for, you know, just stats or something like that. I mean, personally, if I'm just trying to get a quick look at stats, and I for some reason don't go to Baseball Reference or Fangraphs, I go to Yahoo because I play fantasy baseball there. And it said Edmundo Franklin, and no one had any idea how it happened. Now his middle name is Edmund, I believe. I believe that's his middle name, or it's something similar to that, but I don't know how it happened, but it said Edmundo Franklin, and then, you know, Yahoo scrambles and they fix it, right? And then the next day it resets and goes back to Edmundo.
That is outstanding.
And it was like that for about maybe 5-6 days. So on Lookout Landing, we just still kind of refer to him as Edmundo. I'm trying to make it stick. I think it's hilarious.
Does anybody have a screenshot of that? I need that tweeted to me. That is phenomenal.
I will tweet that for you. I believe that I have it somewhere.
That's great. I always call him Frank, and I have to watch not to call him Frank on air. I think I've slipped a couple of times. Not that that'd be the end of the world. I don't know if the fan base knows that Frank is Franklin. But that's what a lot of us call him. But Edmundo might dethrone Frank for me. That's,
yeah,
because I call Brad Sergio now, or Serge, all the time. I don't think I've called him Brad for a while now. But Edmundo, that's phenomenal. Thank you for telling me that.
Yeah, that's a good one. I'm curious to know if he's aware of it. I mean, these things probably get passed around. I'm sure someone might have told him to it, but I'm still trying to make it stick. So let's make Edmundo stick. Right.
I will find out today. I think it does need a stick. That's terrific.
You said Frank, and it just made me think, and Franklin, then I started thinking about Arrested Development, and now that's all I can think about right now.
That's a good show.
That is. Do you, when you're on the road and traveling and stuff like that, I mean, how do you pass the time? Do you watch a lot of marathon TV shows? Or are you all studied up and doing research? And what are you doing to kill time?
Well, I'll lead by saying that I could wake up at 8 in the morning, have breakfast. I could prep for 3 hours, have lunch. I could prep for another 2 hours, get on the bus, go to the ballpark, prep for another 4 hours, talk to the guys, and open up the broadcast at 7, and you still wouldn't be fully prepared.
Right.
I mean, that's just, it's the nature of the beast. And so I try to do about 90 minutes to 2 hours of prep from the hotel each day. And then, like today, it's a 2:30 bus to get to Camden Yards for 7:05 first pitch. You know, if you can walk, you can go there on your own. Sometimes you might take a taxi. But like today, I'll take the bus. But when I'm not doing prep, I'm a big Hulu guy. I can watch shows on Hulu. There have been times, honestly, where I don't turn on the TV at all in my hotel room. I don't know why that is, but it's like everything that I could ever want is on Hulu, or any highlights I want to see are on MLB.com.
Yep.
You know, I'll watch. If the hotel has MLB Network, that's great. I can get caught up on games pretty quickly that way. But for whatever reason, I'm not a big TV in the hotel guy. And I think honestly, and this probably isn't a good thing, but you get so married to your laptop, you know, traveling with that, and you've got it open all game and everything, that it's just like, I feel like I'm looking into my soulmate when I look into my laptop, and that's so I get kind of locked in.
Yeah, man. What are you watching on Hulu?
You know, I was a huge fan of The Office, so I was sad to see that come to an end. That's like one of my all-time favorite shows. Mm-hmm. I typically I have a man crush on Jack Bauer.
Coming back.
Yeah. What is it? Because I keep hearing things on
this. It's coming back. It's confirmed. Okay. Yeah.
That's phenomenal.
It's going to be a, I believe, a 13-episode season. So it's going to be 24. That's not 24.
24? All right.
But 13 episodes, and it's got some, you know, it's like 24, A New Dawn or something. You know, it's got one of those something. There's a colon, then there's some sort of tagline after that. And they've got Bauer Will Be Back, and then Marilyn Rasjub, who is Chloe. She's also coming back for it. So I don't know if it's just going to be a one-off or what they're going to do, because all of Keith Sutherland's other shows really failed.
So Jack's going to be like 50 in this one.
Yeah.
But I own all the 24 seasons on DVD, and I typically kind of go through a couple of seasons a season, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So like I'm traveling with season 5 right now.
Okay.
And which is like every other season, but it's phenomenal. So sometimes I'll work my way either on the flights or here at the hotel. If I need to kill 43 minutes, I'll work through a 24 episode. But, you know, for me, you know, coming up through the minors, and any minor league broadcaster can relate to this, you know, you're in, by and large, you're in just terrible towns. I mean, you're just, you know, you're in the middle of nowhere. Like when I was in the Texas League, you know, you go to Midland, Texas.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to like Corpus Christi, which is actually a pretty nice town. You know, in the International League, you're in Syracuse and Rochester, and you know, not that these towns are awful, but normally you're at a cheap hotel, far away from the city because it's inexpensive. You can't really walk to too many places. So you know, you get to the big leagues, and now you're in Baltimore, or you're in, you know, you play in Oakland, and you're in downtown San Francisco, where our hotel is. And so I try to get out each day for, I don't know, 30 minutes to an hour after I eat lunch, and just kind of do some nerdy sightseeing, because it's, you know, for you're working a ton on the road, but for an hour, you can get a free vacation.
Do you try and go eat lunch in the city, or are you grabbing lunch in the hotel or at the park?
I never have eaten lunch at the hotel or at the ballpark. I get, you know, you get dinner at the ballpark every night, but, you know, I'm on Yelp every day, and what's near me and what's got, oh, this place only has 3 stars.
Yeah, that's instant.
Yeah, I cannot, yeah. I'm sorry. I can't dine there. I cannot give you my money.
It's gotta be minimum 3.5. And that's exactly, if I'm desperate, like if I'm going out, looking for the 4+.
And I also have learned that you have to look for how many ratings, like, you know, it could have 4 stars.
Yes.
But only 6 people have rated it.
Exactly. And then you have to read the reviews.
Yeah.
Because if some of them, right, you got to watch out for those skewed reviewers, because they'll say, well, the sandwich was okay, but the waitress was really nice and she gave me a free burger. Okay. I don't care about that. I want to know, how's the food? That's what, right, I want to know. And if they get knocked down for service and stuff like that, I'm like, I can put up with the bad service. Just, is the food good? That's what I want to know. Is the food good?
Absolutely. So it's every day Yelp and I go to battle and we find, you know, what the best lunch place around town is. So there's some days when, hey, I felt terrible when in Toronto, which has got, our hotel was by some great restaurants, I ran out of time. I worked too long in the hotel. The bus was a little bit earlier that day. I had like 30 minutes and I had to get Subway. Oh. And it was like, I hate Subway because of the minor leagues. So that's the only thing I could ever afford in the minors on the road. Yeah. And there was always a token Subway somewhere near a hotel. So it was like, all right, my 8th day in a row of Subway. So outside of that, I typically, unless I'm just super crunched for time, always try to find, you know, some great local place that I love. I love local bakeries and kind of cafe, coffee shop type places, you know, all homemade stuff. So that's always fun to kind of explore a little bit. And you get burned every once in a while, but by and large, you find just some real gems,
right,
and some fun places to spend a few bucks and get some good food.
Oh, man, we're talking about sandwiches and Yelp. And I just have to say this to you and to anyone else that's in the area at all. In Kirkland, there's a place, it's called Deru Market. It's Deru Market. And it's in the weirdest place. It's right off 85th. So it's, you know, the main street that runs through downtown Kirkland. But it's in kind of towards a neighborhood a little bit. You have to find it on Yelp and on a map because it's in a totally weird location. It's a catering company and they have really oddball hours, but they have the most incredible sandwiches. I mean, just unbelievable sandwiches, amazing food.
Yeah, I just pulled up their website. That looks pretty legit, man. That
yeah.
looks like a good spot.
It is it's really good. What, I had a porchetta sandwich there that was on some focaccia, and I don't know. I don't want to foodie too much out right now, but it was amazing.
Yeah, that looks like good. I will definitely try that out. Absolutely. Thank you for the tip.
You bet. Okay. Well, I'll let you go because I know you've got surely some more prep to do, and
I got to go on Yelp, Scott.
You got to go.
I got to figure out what That's the game right. plan it's, is today.
Yeah, it's lunch. It's lunchtime, 12:30 over there. So, got to get yourself something good out in Baltimore. Don't go anywhere where The Wire is filmed. That would be actually pretty close to Camden Yards, right? Like that whole area where that's what I've kind of heard about Baltimore is that Camden Yards is like, it's all nice around there, but it's like you go a couple blocks in the wrong direction and it's like, let's turn around.
Yeah, we're in a great part of town, but I'm right there with you. Everybody that I hear talk about Baltimore is like, well, watch out. Well, fortunately they put us in wherever we are, just a terrific place. And let me add this, I went down, they have a great fitness center here at the hotel. And I'm walking upstairs after a little bit of a workout this morning. I'm walking to my room. And, you know, at this point of the year, every hotel hallway looks the same. And there was literally a 3-second period of time where I thought, where am I?
Yeah.
I genuinely, for 3 seconds, had no idea what city I was in. And then, Erasmo Ramirez, Scott Feldman, Baltimore, tonight, middle game, 3-game series. All right. But for man, I went dark for 3 seconds. So it's like these things can happen. And you know, Scott, I'll finish by saying, I've, you know, every once in a while I'm able to I love the game previews on Lookout Landing. I love the some of the humor, you know, that your writers and your readers have is just right up my alley. I can't always comment on it, right. but sometimes because I've got a real, at least I think I do, have a pretty dry, sarcastic sense of humor.
Sure.
And that's basically what Lookout Landing is from what I can tell. And so I really do. I mean, if I wasn't a broadcaster, I'd probably be on Lookout Landing all the time just because I find a majority of it just hysterical. So everybody who makes it what it is, keep it up. It's really funny stuff. And you know, it's good. I guess it's good to have there's always fans who take things too far. But there are also fans who keep things in perspective. And there seems to be a decent balance of that on the website. And I know that, you know, you can't control who's going to come on and say what. And I,
right.
that's part about being a fan. But some of the humor on there, I definitely like and certainly respect. And even if I never say anything about it, it's good. I am looking every once in a while, and it's pretty funny.
All right. Well, I appreciate that very much. It's been I've had big shoes to fill taking over for Jeff Sullivan. So
he's I've read some, he is hysterical.
Yeah. Oh, so I mean, it's I'm in his place running the website that he created. So it's you know, I've got a good staff of writers and we do our best. But Jeff is Jeff's the man. He's unmatched.
You guys do a great job.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And good luck with the rest of the series. And hopefully the Mariners can get it turned around. And by the time people hear this, they won't care because they already know.
That's right. Oh, they'll know more than we know right now. What's new?
All right. Well, thanks, Aaron. And enjoy your Yelp excursion.
I'm looking forward to it, Scott. Thanks for thinking of me and having me on.
All right. Thank you.